Welcome back to North Idaho Now. This is episode 169. Nice. Coming at you September 27th. Chance Watson bringing you the news today. This episode is brought to you by Black Sheep Sporting Goods. Home of the lowest prices on all things outdoor since 1975, Black Sheep Sporting Goods is your one-stop shop for all your camping, fishing, hunting, and clothing needs. Open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Check out Black Sheep's new location in the Silver Lake Mall. Black Sheep Sporting Goods, celebrating 45 years as your favorite sporting goods store. Gotta love Black Sheep, everybody. I love that ad because new location in the Silver Lake Mall. Black Sheep basically is the Silver Lake Mall at this point. I remember, though, this is definitely going to be a trip down nostalgia lane for anybody who listens to the show that is from the area or used to grow up in this area, 20 years ago. But I remember a time where the Silver Lake Mall was just overflowing with people. It was kind of the place to hang out. It kind of had some rundown years there. But I also am old enough to know about, I still remember the outlet malls out at State Line, which seem to have a, they're starting to have a moderate revival, it seems like. Alien gear out there now with their holsters. There are a few more businesses popping in there as North Idaho population continues to go. Seems like that area is getting a little busier. But man, I remember every single storefront in that area was just packed. You had every name brand place known to man. Me being 9 years old, 8 years old at the time, I loved the, I think it was a KB Toys. I think if that's, don't quote me on that. I think that it was called a KB Toys, but I can't remember. I loved the toy store out there, though. That was definitely one of my faves. Anyways, getting off topic. Wow, Chance Watson getting off topic. That does not sound like him at all. Now it's actually very on brand. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Glad to have you with us once again. Hope you had a good weekend. Unseasonably warm, I would say. I went out and took that trip out to the Silver Valley. Got to see some of the old stomping grounds and check in with some folks. It was nice. If you were curious, if you're a listener that's like, haven't been to the Silver Valley in a while, I wonder if that place has changed. It hasn't. Hasn't changed. For better or for worse, it is exactly the same. Maybe a new grocery outlet coming in. That's exciting. No, they're not advertising this. Free bit of news for you right there. But yeah, the heat has taken everything kind of by surprise. I'm starting to try to dress for fall. As hockey players would say, this is we're coming up on jersey over hoodie weather. No, we are not. At least it doesn't seem like it because today is supposed to be like 82 or 84 degrees. I guess I could pull up. You know, we have these little things in our hands. They're basically computers that we can take with us everywhere, and they tell us every answer that's ever been. 85, going to be a high of 85 in Coeur d'Alene today. That is just unseasonably warm for late September, folks. I don't know if I like that or not. If you're a fan of warm weather, then you're happy about it. But if you're like me, who appreciates normal human temperatures around anywhere from 68 to 72, then probably a little upset that we can't bust out the hoodies just yet. But we're getting there. Speaking of technology, I was just on my phone today. God, I'm gonna have to go up to the Verizon store today because my Google Pixel 4, which I absolutely love. Yeah, I know there's gonna be some iPhone lovers out there that are like, oh, Android peasant. No, I love my Google phone. Great camera on it. And you know, with our business, we use a lot of Google, Gmail and Google Docs and that kind of thing. So everything kind of just works seamlessly together. I'm certainly not going to complain with Android. And as somebody who uses Apple and Android, I'm definitely not going to weigh in on that debate. I think I'm definitely one of those people that mix and match as someone who owns both a Mac and a PC and has had iPhones and Android platforms. I definitely cannot say that I prefer one or the other. I think they both do great things. I know that sounds kind of wishy-washy, and you come to me for hard opinion. No, I'm just kidding. I'm the guy who always sees both sides of things. But it is fun when I can have a hard opinion and just stick to it irrationally, like my hatred of parades. That is something that I have firmly. My love of Marissa Tomei and hatred for parades. Those are two cornerstones of this show that will stick around until we are finally canceled. Which, you know. Maybe one day. I think my boss Clint is pretty ambivalent on my hatred toward parades. But who knows? Maybe one day he gets promoted and his replacement absolutely loves them, and I'm out of a job. So you know what? We're just gonna let the good times roll and keep going with it as long as it lasts. Another tangent. I went off on another tangent. Can you believe that? I'm gonna have to go up because my phone today. You see, in the upper right hand corner there, where the battery would be. There's a little question mark. My own phone that is on, by the way, everything seems to be working. My own phone can't tell me what the battery percentage is. Like, is it a lot? Is it little? Is it charged? Is it about to die? Who knows? Who knows? It's a guessing game, everybody. So I'm just walking around kind of plugging it in as I go from A to B and just hoping that everything is fine. I should probably look into that. Yeah, I'll probably as later today when I have some free time, I might go to Verizon and make sure. Because I don't know if you know this or not, but my job kind of involves a lot of my phone. So I will probably have to get into that. Speaking of, though, I was on this device that I don't know the battery percentage of, and I came across an article today about beloved actor Tom Hanks. Have you guys heard of this man? Tom Hanks. Famous actor in many, many classic films. But speaking of his classic films, Tom Hanks recently said that out of the decades of career, the decades that he's been acting, he's only had 4 pretty good movies, and he didn't elaborate on it. He did not say. So real quick, I got curious. What movies does he think were actually good versus what I think are actually good? And I'm not going to say here that I'm a Tom Hanks stan. I have not seen every single movie that Tom Hanks has been in. I know that there's a few that are big ones that I've just missed, like Big, for example. I haven't seen it. So there's a few on here, but I jumped into it. Just going to guess the ones that he probably thinks are masterpieces, the ones he thinks are pretty, in his words, pretty good. Saving Private Ryan. You got it. You know, that's the classic movie. Then you got to go Forrest Gump. You know, that's probably something that's up there. After that, boy, it kind of gets into the weeds a little bit of what you think is pretty good. I'm going to say probably Castaway, even though he's probably tired of people saying Wilson. I think he's probably real sick and tired of people saying that, probably throwing face painted volleyballs at him. Maybe Castaway. That was a good role. And then I think at that point, it kind of goes up in the air. You can make a case for The Green Mile. Definitely liked him in that. There's he does a great role in that. God, just scrolling down here, Apollo 13 maybe, but I know he's been involved in a lot of stuff. Like on here it says Band of Brothers. I know he wasn't in it, but he had a definite role in it. He's got some to choose from here. My favorite Tom Hanks movies. I'm going to go Saving Private Ryan's got to be number one. That movie is truly a masterpiece. Not only for war films, but also just in films in general. Such a great movie. After that, I kind of deviate from what he would probably say. I'm not the hugest Forrest Gump fan. I know a lot of people are going to just boycott this show now because I said that. But I'm not a huge Forrest Gump fan. I would say that and this maybe because it has him and Leo in it. But Catch Me If You Can is one of my favorite movies with Tom Hanks. I know it's animated, but him and Toy Story, just fantastic. Toy Story is one of my favorite animated films, probably my favorite Pixar film. And the fact that they've still made four of them, and there's not really a weak one. You could rank them, but I would say that they're all pretty good. Like the third one, man, by the time the third one came out, when did the third one come out? 2010. So I was, you know, I was, that was 12 years ago. Okay. So I was, you know, in my late teens. That still made me tear up. The end of it when they're driving away from Andy's place. Oh, man. Such a tearjerker. So, okay. Toy Story. I know that's animated, so that maybe might not count in your eyes, but I love Toy Story. Nothing wrong with that. Turner and Hooch is a great movie. I wouldn't say it's up there. You know what? Now I'm looking at this list. I need to see A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood when he plays Mr. Rogers. I need to see that because I grew up watching Mr. Rogers, loved that, and loved Mr. Rogers. That guy's story is crazy. So I do need to see his performance in that. But yeah, looking at I need to watch Greyhound. I've heard that that's really good. Also liked him in The Green Mile. That's good. This says he's an Elvis. What does he do in Elvis? Ooh, I need to see him in Elvis. I need to see the Elvis movie. Colonel Tom. Oh, isn't that his manager or something? Again, obviously, Chance isn't a Elvis stan. But yeah, okay, I definitely need to watch that. Da Vinci Code, no thanks. Pass. Hard pass on the Da Vinci Code. No thank you. That is something. Ooh, Sully. I need to watch him in Sully. That looks really good too. Captain Phillips. I saw the memes from the game from that, but I never watched that movie. See, I'm definitely behind on my Tom Hanks stuff. So maybe I'm not the authority on Tom Hanks films, but I definitely could tell you the ones that I enjoy and the ones that he probably, I don't know, maybe he thinks that his performance in Sully or something was really good, but just to throw us all off, he wouldn't go with the obvious ones of Saving Private Ryan or Forrest Gump, so who knows? But I do know that of all the actors out there, that guy's got probably the highest favorability rating. Like if you like with politicians, actors have favorability ratings. Tom Hanks is probably right up there. There's not too many people that are probably upset or angry with Tom Hanks. I'm just guessing, though. Maybe there's one person on this show that's I hate Tom Hanks, Chance. Don't tell me what to think. Tom Hanks is a hack. And I would say that, well, that is a very strong stance to take, especially on somebody who's really not that controversial, at least compared to other actors out there anyway. All right, guys, we've got a great show for you today. As promised from last week, we've got Megan Johns of the Idaho Transportation Department coming at you with our monthly traffic update in North Idaho. Construction going on all over the place. Usually this is the time of year where they're closing up their projects, settling stuff down. But no, gang. I know you're excited to hear all about all the construction that's gone on in North Idaho, so you can plan your routes accordingly. So without further ado, let's jump into our interview and traffic update with Megan Johns. Megan, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you. Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. What traffic news do you have for us today?
You know, when we get to this time of year, you see projects ramping up and ramping down. And at this point, we're still ramping up. So we have a lot of activity on just about every work zone on I-90 this week.
The leaves are falling right now. Isn't this usually the time where you guys start looking to pack things up a little bit?
Exactly. So fall's in the air. Contractors are looking to button up projects before winter. So it's time to go. It's crank time.
Got right up next to the deadline, I guess you could say.
Oh, always. It seems like even the best projects, we always end up pushing weather in North Idaho.
Right. Okay, well, let's start with what we normally do. I-90, what do we got?
So if we kind of just start out at the 41 interchange in Post Falls, we've been closing the eastbound off-ramp as needed to work in that area, but we're also this week starting a pretty big milestone of the bridge construction. So the new interchange has an insane amount of bridges, and so we're starting the permanent bridges, and it's going to take all the way till next year to finish, but in terms of milestones, this is a big one.
Okay, and how's traffic going to be affected with that?
Traffic's going to stay pretty much the same it's been. Two lanes during the day, slow down to about 55 miles an hour. We're still taking a lane at night, slowing traffic down. We're shifting people around as needed, so we have room to work. For the most part, we're going to stay, hopefully, less impactful than people thought we were going to be at this phase.
That's pretty good. How's that project been going so far? Everything on schedule? No unexpected hiccups?
Not too many hiccups so far. I think the biggest thing is just the speed limit. Drivers aren't quite slowing down. You know, of course, that work zone is right at the bottom of a hill. So I think that's the tough part. We're trying to figure out how much can we slow people down? How much, like, functionally can we in terms of compliance? You know, what can we actually expect? Because differential speeds in a work zone are really dangerous.
You hear that, listeners? That was a very nice way that Megan said to please slow down.
Yes, maybe too nice. Slow down, people.
There you go. Okay, anything else on the 41 interchange?
Nope.
Perfect. All right, let's move further down. What else we got?
Yeah, so you probably just saw us start and work last week on this overpass, the Hilltop Road overpass near Kingston. And it's, you know, this time of year we're finishing projects. We're not usually starting projects, but in this case, we're building crossovers prepared to move traffic around. This bridge was actually struck by an oversized load earlier this summer, and we're getting in there to fix that girder so we can reopen the overpass. So that's a new one that's just going to pop up for a brief amount of time. Drivers, they're going to be moved around and crossed over to the other side of the freeway so we can fix that girder.
Gotcha. And that's going to kind of going at the same time as the stuff that you guys have been doing at the base of 4th of July Pass still.
Yes, yeah, the 4th of July Pass paving, that's still going to be ongoing. This overpass we're working on, it'll be done by late October. So again, grace in the weather, but it's new. It hasn't, we haven't been working on it, so it might take some people by surprise.
Sure, sure. Those single lane closures at the bottom of 4th of July, are those going to continue out through the winter?
Not through the winter, of course. Definitely can't do paving there in the winter. We are actually preparing to shift traffic. So right now, everyone's on the westbound set of lanes, reduced to 45 miles per hour. We're thinking by this Friday, maybe next Monday, we'll be done with the westbound lanes, put people on what we just finished, and start working on the eastbound side.
Perfect, perfect. And then kind of same thing goes for the construction work in Kellogg on the bridges.
Yeah, I mean, that construction zone's going to stay pretty similar. That's a two-year job. We'll finish up the one set of bridges this year and start working on the westbound next year. But actually, this week, we're going to be placing the girders on the Elizabeth Park structure, which is basically a big milestone when you're building bridges. The girders are horizontal support beams, usually steel or something like that. And that's, you know, going to form the foundation of the bridge and what people are going to drive on eventually. So that's a big milestone. Signals are getting very close to being done for the season in Kellogg.
Okay, that's not bad at all. And then do we still have work near Lookout and near Mullen?
Yes, we do. So we started, we switched traffic about the second week of September to the other side. So all traffic's now on the westbound lanes. We're working on the eastbound lanes. Of course, we're still focusing on people not passing in that work zone. It's not safe to do it. It's illegal to do it as well. We are also on the eastbound side. What's different from what we did on the other side? This is where we've had a rockfall issue, some big boulders coming down on the freeway. And so we'll be building a barrier basically to protect traffic around milepost 66. So something they'll see driving by that looks a little different than what we did on the other side.
Gotcha. So Silver Valley drivers still need to keep an eye out for those work zones.
Yes, yes, they're not going anywhere.
Gotcha, perfect. Okay, let's shift gears, go north-south. What are we thinking?
Yeah, so the US 95 Granite North project, you know, work on the hill. Traffic is running on a main line, so the divided four-lane section. Frontage roads are open as well. We're still slowing people down when crews are on site, but that's very close to officially being done. And south of that on 95, the Spokane River Bridge, we've advertised this one. I'm going to be working on replacing the railing, the expansion joints, and that's starting this week, actually. So it's going to be pretty benign, mainly shoulder closures at night. Night for us starts around 7 p.m.
Sure.
But there will be sometimes a couple weeks here and there when we're working on something where we need to take a whole lane. So we'll be back at that location again.
Gotcha. Hey, speaking of that bridge, how have you guys been dealing with the large fan blades that have been coming through the area? Have you guys seen any increased traffic or any real delays with that kind of stuff going on?
You know, those windmill loads, the blades they're moving, are still in the testing process. Of course, you make a plan and permit, and they work with each and every contractor on their route. But then you actually do it and see how it works. And so that transportation company is still figuring out exactly how to get through our state and then Montana so they can get to Canada. So we're not in full swing yet. Their delays have been kind of inconsistent as they're figuring things out. But for the most part, all done at night, not affecting most drivers.
Perfect, perfect. Sounds good. But if you are a night driver, once again, keep an eye out for those things. You can't miss them. They're hard to miss. I saw one that was parked on the side of the road. It's kind of hard to miss those.
Yes, and they're the longest ones we've had so far. You know, this isn't the first windmill blades that we've had come through on their way to Canada, but this is the longest in recent years.
That's crazy. They're really cool. Like you don't you know, you see them from a distance, you don't really expect them to be that big, but yeah. Very cool. Okay, going back up north, heading toward Sandpoint. There's work on the Long Bridge, correct?
Yeah, not on the Long Bridge, but just north of it between the Byway Bridge and the Long Bridge. We're just doing some nighttime paving. It's a small relatively small maintenance job. So up to a week of nighttime paving, starting 8 p.m. each night. Really mindful of the impacts to drivers, and that's why we're making our contractor hold off starting nighttime work. We really want to let people go about their business without us bugging them.
Gotcha. Any closures on that or anything?
Yep, we'll close the lane each night to do the paving there, so 8 p.m. to roughly 5 a.m.
Gotcha. Okay. Anything else? Anything further north toward, like, Bonner's Ferry?
Oh, well, you know, Bonner's Ferry, we've been working on rebuilding 95 through town with a consistent center turn lane, as well as, you know, city features like sidewalks and lighting. And we are actually just about to announce that we're done and we're off the highway. We're pretty close there. We're not quite there yet, but we're about to take a victory lap, hopefully, and then we'll be back next year to finish what we started.
Nice. There we go. There's at least one banked, right?
Yeah, so when projects end, it's always a good day for us all.
Good stuff. Okay. Recap. Anything else that we missed on? Maybe did I see something about work on 53?
Yes, 53. I think we surprised some people. Things didn't quite go the way we had planned for them to go. So there's two things. There was a minor maintenance project near the state line. And I know just the nature of traffic on that road, we ended up causing some pretty significant delays. And then there's a larger project where we're actually changing the road between kind of the Hauser to Bress area, adding a center turn lane.
Okay.
We're starting to do some paving of patches on 53, really buttoning it up for winter so we can come back and finish the project next year. But we've been disrupting traffic. If you're using 53, plan extra time. Maybe take a different route.
Okay, you heard it here first. Avoid the area if possible, kind of thing.
Yeah, you can only do that so much in Coney County.
Sure.
Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a rural area. You only got so many roads, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Okay, Megan, anything else to throw in there? Do we miss anything else?
I would just throw out a reminder, back to school. We've been in school in North Idaho for a couple weeks now, but it's getting darker outside. We haven't rolled back the clocks yet. So just be mindful of more pedestrians and school kids getting where they need to go. Give them their space and look for them.
Perfect. All right, Megan, I think that's it. Thanks for coming on once again for a traffic update. And we'll see you probably here in roughly a month.
Yeah, drive safe.
Hecla Mining Company is a leading low-cost silver producer with operating silver mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico, and is a growing gold producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They are the largest primary silver producer in the U.S., responsible for one-third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted value-based culture, leveraging mining skills to build up the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit heclamining.com. Takes into Coeur d'Alene Post Falls Press headlines for Saturday, September 24th. Headline, We Are the Wings of Love. This is by Bill Bewley. Earl Hollingsworth watched from across the street as the dedication of the, quote, Monument to Peace and Unity wrapped up on a sunny Friday morning. He liked what he saw and heard. Quote, pretty cool, the Rathdrum man said. About 100 people, most of them students and city officials, attended a 30-minute ceremony at the Four Corners intersection of Northwest Boulevard, Government Way, and Fort Grounds Drive, considered the gateway to Coeur d'Alene. The 24-foot-tall steel piece of art depicts two ribbons of birds swirling upward. It was created by artist I.Q. Holpen of Humanity Memorial, Inc. It includes the statements, quote, we support the self-evident truth that all persons are created equal, and we believe that dignity of each human being is inviolable. Boy, I struggle with that word. Hopin, in a brief but passionate speech, said, quote, the birds of peace and unity soaring from these sacred words, written by the courageous lives of many demonstrating the power of love, is stronger than the power of hatred, rising from peace permanently. After the ceremony, Hopin talked to students from Sorensen Magnet School of the Arts and Humanities and encouraged them to walk around and inside the monument. According to a press release, the $75,000 project was created to be a warm welcome to all people and a symbol of Coeur d'Alene's, quote, commitment to eliminate racism and prejudice. Quote, we have risen to the challenge of hate before we can do it again, said Arts Commissioner John Burning. Hopin, selected to create the monument after a national search, said the birds she created are flying upward into the future. Quote, "We are the light transforming the darkness of bigotry," she said. "We are the wings of love." The commission's criteria for the monument included a longstanding commitment to the equality of all people, social and economic justice for all, dignity and worth of every individual, respect for diversity, and the value in creating a strong and more peaceful society. The city's public art ordinance adopted in 1999 established funding for public art that, quote, provides public visibility and impact. Hollingsworth said some might question the cost of the monument now, but he was confident it was money well spent. Oh boy, well, that's certainly an opinion of his. Quote, "They might think that it is a little extravagant, but it's here for a few years. It will be looking good," he added. Okay, well, I talked about this before. Art is subjective. Some people can look at a blank white canvas and think that it's something beautiful. I'm sorry, this thing kind of looks like a hollowed out oil drum. And I don't know if $75,000 spent on a hollowed out oil drum is going to stop eliminate racism and prejudice. I think we might be putting a little lot of expectation on a piece of metal that's in the middle of a roundabout. But you know, I'm certainly not an artist, so maybe it's off of my radar. But yeah, that's. I feel like $75,000 could probably go into something else, in my humble, happy opinion. Moving on, doctors helping students become great. This by Devin Weeks. A building of the University of Idaho's Moscow campus has been named the D.A. Huckabee M.D. Medical Education Building to honor a local family that has provided immense support for medical students throughout the years. The Idaho WWAMI Medical Education Building at 121 West Sweetwater Avenue was dedicated during a ceremony on Tuesday. Quote, "It's obviously an honor. It wasn't expected," John Huckabee of Coeur d'Alene said Friday. "We strongly believe in the students." The Huckabee family was established the largest endowment of the U of I's history, named the Durward and Susan Huckabee Foundation Scholarship Endowment. The $12 million endowment will benefit Idaho residents receiving medical education at U of I and clinical training in rural communities across Idaho as WWAMI medical students. A surprise gift of $2 million during the dedication event brings the total to $14 million. To honor his grandfather's legacy as a rural physician, John Huckabee has supported scholarships for more than 2,000 WWAMI medical education graduates since the 1990s. Quote, "My granddad was the ultimate country doctor," Huckabee said. The building naming ceremony included 80 current WWAMI medical students. WWAMI is the University of Washington School of Medicine's multi-state medical education program. The acronym stands for the states served by the UW School of Medicine, Washington, Wyoming, Alaska, Montana, and Idaho. Students must be Idaho residents to enroll in the U of I Medical School. Hey, never going to get in the way or be against money going to help people become doctors. And that's a good trade. That's a worthy trade. And definitely helping out local scholars. Medical school is not cheap. So any little bit of help can be awesome. And congratulations to the Huckabee family for this honor. Moving on, NIC trustee candidate forum announced. A forum featuring candidates seeking election to the North Idaho College Board of Trustees will take place from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. on October 5th in the Schuller Auditorium on the NIC campus in Coeur d'Alene. This in-person event is organized by the Joint Chamber Public Policy Committee, which comprises members from all four chambers of commerce in Kootenai County. Election day is November 8th. The candidates invited to participate are running for the three trustee positions in Zone 1, 2, and 5 that are now held by trustees appointed earlier this year by Idaho State Board of Education. To register to attend the North Idaho College Board of Trustee Election Forum, visit business.cdachamber.com/events/details/candidate-forum-North-Idaho-College-Board-of-Trustees. Or I would probably just go to the CDA Chamber of Commerce page, and I'm sure that there's links going to be there. Yes, very important, everybody. I always like to say I stopped kind of following national politics a long time ago, mostly for my own sanity. I felt like I was getting really obsessed and really heated and passionate about things that were kind of outside of my control and more often than not didn't really affect me. And I understand it's very good to be educated on that kind of stuff and know what's going on in your community. So that's why I really – local politics is what directly affects all of us here in North Idaho. Like if you're – whoever your mayor is, your city council, the board of trustees, these are the people that will make decisions that directly affect your life. And for North Idaho College, a place that I have said time and time again I hold close to my heart on this show, I definitely – that because of that place, I was able to go to school and pay for it and not go into debt. So, strong leadership is good for that place. And I encourage everybody, whether it be the NIC Board of Trustees, your mayor, your city council, your zoning committee, whatever, do your research. Don't just vote on who somebody tells you to vote for. Go out, make your own decisions, see what they believe in, and go from there. And candidate forums are a great place to hear what the candidates actually believe and what they have to say. Moving on. Sunday, September 25th, Taxing Times in Hutter. Oh boy. This is by Bill Bealey. Kootenai County Commissioner Leslie Duncan recently suggested Hutter no longer be an incorporated city after it missed filing for its budget hearing notification and was denied an extension. Quote, hopefully you guys will work really hard and do good for your residents or think about being absorbed by a neighboring city, she told City Clerk Lang Sumner and Mayor Brad Keene during a county business meeting on Tuesday. According to the Kootenai County Auditor's Office, cities are required to publish their proposed budget and their public hearing date twice, 7 days apart. At the public hearing, the city council must vote on the budget. Then the paperwork must be submitted to the county clerk's office no later than September 8th. County officials said Hutter missed that deadline, filed incomplete or inaccurate forms with wrong dates, scheduled a budget hearing September 6th but didn't hold it, provided incorrect email addresses, and then sought an extension. Commissioners unanimously denied it. Since the BOCC declined Hutter's extension request, that means it will not be able to levy property taxes on its residents for fiscal year 2023. It will instead have to fund operational expenses from its fund balance. Hutter's $102,180 budget for fiscal year 2022-2023 included a property tax levy of $69,515. Quote, it almost sounds as though we're punishing the residents of Hutter, said Commissioner Chris Filios. I don't know not approving is going to prove anything, he said. On another hand, I don't know how to send a message because this has been habitual. Commissioner Bill Brooks agreed. Quote, the red flag for me is habitual, he said. Sumner apologized. Quote, we missed our scheduled date, he said. No excuses. We just simply missed it. Lots of errors were done. Sumner said the city, which lies between Coeur d'Alene to the east and Post Falls to the west, or along Southeast Way, has fewer than 200 residents, does not have schools or a fire department. It operates a tight budget, he said, and is saving to improve its water system. Sumner said the city has a carryover each year that has about $215,000 in its general fund. Quote, so we can self-fund our year, he said. Its expenditures for the next year were $78,000. $892 for the general fund, $21,175 for the water fund, and $2,113 for the street fund. Its expenses include city council salaries and Sumner's wages of about $36,000, utilities, insurance, equipment, internet, and banking fees. Quote, our budget is really pretty straightforward, Sumner said. The only reason we're here is I simply made a multitude of mistakes. Well, at least he's owning it. The Kootenai County Auditor's Office provided the press with an outline summarizing the situation. Point one, Hutter's budget was first published 3 days apart rather than 7 days apart on September 2nd and September 5th. The budget was mislabeled as fiscal year 2022. Item two, no city officials showed up for the public hearing on September 6th. Item three, the budget was then published again 1 day apart rather than 7 days apart. On September 3rd and September 14th, the budget was still mislabeled as fiscal year 2022. Item 4, the budget was voted on by city officials on September 15th, 1 week past the statutory deadline to submit their L2 to the county clerk or request an extension from the BOCC. The outline also noted the commissioners can't grant an extension past September 19th. Hutter asked for an extension on September 20th. The Hutter City Council held an emergency meeting about 2 weeks ago so Sumner could bring them up to speed on the situation. He said he gave the council the details and takes responsibility for what happened. Sumner said being the city clerk is a second job. Quote, 40 hours on top of 40 hours, he said. 10 years ago, no one wanted the city clerk job, Sumner said. Quote, it was either the city dissolve or somebody step up, and I stepped up, he said. Well, I don't know if you stepped up too much, considering that it doesn't sound like you're doing your job. But you know what? People make mistakes. And as somebody who grew up in Post Falls and loves the novelty of the city of Hutter being in between Post Falls and Coeur d'Alene, I definitely think I'm rooting for the city of Hutter, and I hope they sort their stuff out. I hope Mr. Sumner gets his stuff together for all parties involved here. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people didn't even know that Hutter exists, especially folks new to the area. Hutter is that little itty-bitty city between the two towns of Coeur d'Alene and Post Falls on Hutter Road. Kind of hard to miss. It's that four-way intersection on Old Saltese Road. I always thought it was a cool little thing. Fun fact, also, state line, its own city. Who knew? I did, but something that's also probably not known by the general population. Initial success or total failure? Mad Bomber Brewing Company, located at 9265 North Government Way in Hayden, Idaho, is a veteran-owned and operated business that has been serving North Idaho since 2013. Swing by the brewery to see the new taproom renovations and try the freshly tapped Oktoberfest. Coming in at 26 IBU and 5.6 ABV, this ale features Munich malt and English yeast, giving it a slightly sweet, earthy finish. Don't forget to check out their Oktoberfest party on October 15th, coming up to celebrate that time of the year and the release of the Oktoberfest. Mad Bomber Brewing also offers a wide selection of ciders for those who may not want beer. Located near Triple Play, come by and mention the podcast when you order to receive $1 off your first beer. Mad Bomber Brewing, recklessly brewed in Hayden, Idaho. Takes into Monday, September 26th headlines. Headlines: Saving Swoop and Soar. This is by Bill Bewley. Janie Veldkamp loves a happy ending. Quote, Swoop and Soar has one. Quote, you've got to have a happy ending if you're going to inspire kids, she said Friday. In her new children's book with co-author Deborah Lee Rose, Veldkamp tells the true story of the rescue of two wild osprey chicks named Swoop and Soar, oh great names, that were only 10 days old when they became orphans when a storm shattered their forest nest in Florida. Quote, science helps find them a new family and home in the wild, the raptor biologist said. Veldkamp knows about saving birds. That's what she and husband Don have done for nearly three decades through Birds of Prey Northwest, based in St. Mary's. They have helped rehabilitate thousands of injured and near-death birds of prey, including bald eagles, falcons, hawks, and osprey. She said education and conservation are key to raising awareness and finding solutions to protecting these majestic creatures. The book introduces readers to environmental challenges osprey face, from extreme weather, habitat loss, and plastic pollution. It also explains how Veldkamp and other scientists reintroduced ospreys to bringing back the once endangered species after the insecticide DDT wiped them out in parts of the U.S. and other countries. December 2022 marks 50 years since DDT was banned in the U.S. Veldkamp said many may not remember DDT or even know it used to lead to thousands of deaths of raptors. Quote, it's important that we talk about the past so we don't repeat it, she said. The recovery of the populations of bald eagles and ospreys are modern-day success stories, she added. She's proud to be a part of it. Such birds are an indicator species, she said, and teach people how well they are taking care of the planet. Veldkamp said through stories like Swoop and Soar, how science rescued two osprey orphans and found them a new family in the wild. Her previous book with Rose, Beauty and the Beak, How Science, Technology, and 3D Printed Beak Rescued a Bald Eagle. That's super cool. I've seen the photo of that. She hopes that youth come to know about the challenges faced by wildlife and what they can do to protect them. She shared the message of more than 100 adults and kids in two presentations at the Coeur d'Alene Public Library on Saturday. The story of Swoop and Soar unfolds as Veldkamp, in a race against time to nurse the chicks back to health and place them in a new nest with new osprey parents. But will the new parents accept Swoop and Soar as their own young? Or will the parents reject the chicks and fly away forever? Don't worry, Veldkamp made sure there is a happy ending. Well, I would hope so. We led the story off with there is a happy ending. So I'm gonna go out on a limb here. Spoiler alert, everybody. I think the chicks are well in hand. Moving on, no wake buoys installed on Hayden Lake. This is by Mary Ann Stoll, a contributing writer for the press. Since Labor Day, boaters on Hayden Lake are now benefiting from 15 new navigation buoys and one hazard buoy, recently installed and maintained by the Hayden Lake Watershed Improvement District. The navigation buoys meet Coast Guard standards for aids to navigation, help boaters identify the 200-foot no-wake zone specified in Kootenai County Ordinance to protect swimmers, fishers, and non-motorized craft that recreate near the shore. The new navigation buoys are positioned within sight right of each other, marking the edge of the zone where the maximum speed is 5 miles per hour and wakes must not exceed 4 inches. In addition to navigation buoys, one hazard buoy has been installed in Mockins Bay to alert those enjoying lake recreation in the bay of the dangerous sandbar hidden below the surface during the high water boating season. This set of buoys completes a 33-buoy permit issued to the Watershed Improvement District in cooperation with county agency stakeholders. Buoys installed without a permit are illegal. Because they are often positioned or configured incorrectly, they make the message conveyed by legally permitting buoys ambiguous, and the boating laws more challenging for the sheriff's office to enforce. Kind of makes me think of, like, you know, hooligans going out and taking – moving around traffic cones, going out there and making your own buoys. Probably that takes a lot of effort. I doubt hooligans are doing that as much as moving cones around. Moving on, last headlines for the day for Coeur d'Alene. Tuesday, September 27th, headline, Northern Lakes gets $12 million grant. This by Bill Buehling. Northern Lakes Fire District Chief Pat Riley has 6 months to hire 12 firefighters. That's a challenge, but one he's happy to accept. Quote, "It's not as easy as folks would think," Riley said Monday. "We're competing nationally with a whole lot of other departments." But he is determined to succeed because much is at stake. Northern Lakes Fire was recently awarded a $4.5 million federal grant to hire 12 firefighters to staff a third station. The Department of Homeland Security 2021 Staffing for Adequate Fire and Emergency Response Grant will fund salaries and benefits for 3 years. The third station will be in the Garwood area, staffed with 2 medics and 2 firefighter EMTs. It will reduce response times, improve safety, and save lives and property, Riley said. Opening the third station will also reduce insurance premiums for many homeowners, Riley said, and some who have had their insurance carriers drop them will be able to have their property insured again. The district plans to have a new modular building constructed for its Garwood station. Funding for the station is not included in the grant, so it will be financed over several years, Riley said. There is a caveat of sorts amid this good news. After the 3-year life of the grant, the district will seek an override levy to maintain all 12 firefighters and keep the Garwood station open, quote, "or we're going to lose them," he said. Since 2012, the fire district has attempted 5 levy overrides to increase service and improve response times, but has come up short each time. An override levy requires 2/3 majority to pass. Most recently, in November, a $2 million permanent override levy failed despite a 60.6% support. Riley had success with impact fees being implemented to fund the district. The city of Rathdrum started collecting impact fees 2 months ago that will go to the district, while Hayden and Kootenai County proper residents in the fire districts are set to do the same. Northern Lakes fire coverage area is 108 square miles in Rathdrum, Hayden, and Twin Lakes areas, with about 60,000 residents. In 2021, it responded to a 6,398 incidents. From 2013 to 2020, Northern Lakes Fire saw a 52% increase in emergency response. The district, with stations in Rathdrum and Hayden, has 39 firefighters, 3 chief officers, a fire marshal, a deputy fire marshal, 3 administrative support staff, and a fleet mechanic. Quote, "We're only getting busier," Riley said. The growth has led to some concerns. Not much for me to add on that one. I think it's pretty obvious that our area is continuing to grow, and with that growth, you're just going to see more emergencies. You're also specifically seeing a lot of growth in those areas that the Northern Lakes Fire Department handles. So it kind of makes sense, and I've already said it before. I've always thought it was very strange that, you know, anytime that you have to have 2/3 majority on a vote to get something passed, that's just not how we handle elections. It's always a simple majority. So I don't understand why something as arbitrary as, you know, this versus this has a majority and this doesn't. So, or a simple majority versus a super majority. So very strange on that part. Moving on, Saturday Night Lights mystify residents. This is by Bill Buehling. The Saturday Night Lights show lasted only a few minutes, but Bill Campbell can still see it. It was a string of perfectly aligned 8 to 10 lights in the western sky, angling downward, the brightest one in the middle. They were so bright, Campbell and his wife noticed them while watching TV at their home on the east side of Lake Coeur d'Alene. He grabbed his telescope and went outside for a better look just before 9 p.m. As he watched, the string of lights suddenly disappeared, leaving behind what seemed to be a single multicolored pulsating light. Quote, "It was the strangest, most bizarre thing," he said. Campbell wasn't alone in wondering what was up. Ron Miller with the National Weather Service in Spokane said there were some inquiries. The answer seemed to be that the lights were from a SpaceX rocket topped with 52 Starlink internet satellites that was launched from Florida's Cape Canaveral Space Force Station on Saturday around 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The launch continues the build out of SpaceX Starlink's mega constellation, which provides internet service for people with around the world, according to space.com. Campbell said the lights seem to be just a few miles away over Lake Coeur d'Alene. The multicolored sphere-shaped object stuck around another minute before it also disappeared. He said in all his years of being an avid outdoorsman, he has never seen anything like it. Quote, with all the people on the lake, there have been others who saw this, he said. There were. The lights were spotted by more people in North Idaho and Eastern Washington. I saw them myself, just because I'm kind of up on that kind of stuff. Well, and it seems like if you are on Twitter at all, you can't scroll through your feed without seeing something from Elon Musk unless you block him. I probably had a guess, not to mention I've written a story about Starlink before. It's very cool, the fact that we're going to be able to – I think it's a – but I'm kind of a techie person. So I really enjoyed that kind of stuff. I think that was super cool. And seeing that perfect – science. Science, everybody. Science rules. That's a Bill Nye reference for the millennials out there. All right, moving north to the Bonner County Daily Bee out of Sandpoint. Headline Saturday, September 24th, Michigan man faces charges. This is by Daniel Radford. William Henry Jordan, 65, and complete pile of shit. That's not in the story, but I'm going to add this in here, is facing three court cases, all stemming from the alleged sexual abuse of a toddler in August of 2021. Jordan is facing two felonies, the first for failure to register as a sex offender upon moving to Idaho, and the second for felony injury to a child. Jordan has a previous convictions for child sex crimes in Michigan as well as Florida. Jordan came to stay at a Spirit Lake residence for what was believed to be for a few days. At first, he was made to sleep in a vehicle on the property, but as Jordan's visit extended into several, according to court documents. The property owners felt bad for not letting him sleep in the trailer, according to court documents. Jordan, who had been allowed at the home due to the family's religious convictions, was kicked out after a series of suspicious incidents. He was seen touching himself while children looked for clothes at the residence. He was told to leave after he was seen grabbing a toddler, who is the victim, by the groin to lift them up. Oh, what a creep. While the victim was visiting family out of state, they told the relatives about a different incident. According to the child, Jordan entered the parents' bedroom where the victim and a younger sibling were staying to avoid contact with the man. According to court documents, the victim said that he undid their pajama bottoms and began to kiss them in that area. That's disgusting. The incident stopped when the rest of the family returned to the home. The registry offense carries a 10-year sentence and a $5,000 fine. Jordan has already pleaded guilty to this charge, changing his plea in an agreement to drop other charges. His other felony charge carries a 10-year prison sentence and a $50,000 fine if convicted. Jordan has entered a binding plea agreement, according to MyCourts.Idaho.gov. His arraignment, which has been scheduled for September 29th, has since been vacated. Sentencing is scheduled for December 6th. My opinion, he's getting off pretty easy. 10 years is definitely not enough for somebody who does that kind of garbage. Ugh. Moving on, Tuesday, September 27th, headline Shooting for Mars. This is by Bo White Eagle. Clark Fork High School junior Emily Myers dared to go infinity and beyond this summer with the Idaho Science and Aerospace Scholarships Program. Good job, Bo. That's a nice Toy Story reference. One of a select number of juniors from around the state, Myers was chosen from the summer program at the Aerospace Institute located at Boise State University. Probably not the best place to put any sort of program, but, you know, whatever. Go Vandals. To be eligible, students had to be enrolled in the Idaho Digital Learning Alliance class specific to the program, score in the top 80% of that class, and get a letter of recommendation from an Idaho senator or representative. Myers met the challenge and was accepted into the program. Once there, the 40 students were broken into four teams and tasked with planning a mission to Mars. For nearly a week in July, Myers represented Bonner County as the team leader for the Blue Team. Her team was responsible for determining the purpose of the mission and what to do once the team arrived there. In order to prepare, students were flown to Los Angeles for a trip to the California Science Center and the Caltech Jet Propulsion Laboratory. At the lab, students were able to see the duplicate Martian rovers as well as the Artemis 1, which is set to launch for the moon any day. Students got the chance to ask experts about their missions and receive feedback on their designs. They also attended a panel discussion for JPL interns to ask questions about moving forward and their careers. Mars and her team were able to talk with Idaho astronaut Barbara Morgan, who praised them for their designs. Once back in Boise, the teams got to work designing their mission, with the Blue team tasked with designing a surface exploration vehicle, a spacesuit, and the equipment to bring on the trip. During the process, Myers' team decided that the course of action would lead them to the set up satellites prior to the mission, and once there, circumnavigate Mars four times. The team concluded it would be the safest to include two people in the orbiter with the rest in the SEV while exploring the planet. That way, the people in the orbiter could bring in cargo, and the team could work in shifts to prevent exhaustion. At the end of the week, teams presented their plans with professional research posters and explained their process at the convention center of BSU to an audience of parents and mentors. That's so cool. I love that kind of stuff. Every time I jump onto Facebook or Twitter or something and I see that NASA has posted a photo from Mars, like, hey, this is us in the Sea in Tranquility or, you know, whatever area they are on Mars, I think we really take for granted sometimes the cool stuff that we are seeing. You know, it was not long ago where we were just learning to fly, and now we literally get to see pictures, high resolution pictures of another planet, you know, somewhere that no human has ever stepped and never seen until before now. And we can just see it on our phones like it's, you know, a Tuesday. So I think that is super cool. Moving on, fires in area waning. This is by Carolyn Lobsinger. Another fire update for you guys. Smoke and fog are settling into the valleys at night and are slow to lift in the morning, Kootenai River Complex fire officials said Monday. Quote, this has made monitoring difficult in the mornings for firefighters, but has also kept fire behaviors relatively low, they said in a press release. The fire, which has burned an estimated 21,692 acres northwest of Bonners Ferry, is being fought by 221 personnel led by a Type 2 Eastern Area Incident Management Team Gold. Completion of tasks that should lead to containment of the fire has increased to 85%, officials said. The next step in managing these fires and suppression, repair, with crews starting construction of water bars along dozer lines where they won't affect the integrity of the control line. In regard to the Boulder Mountain Fire, Northwest Incident Management Team 13 has achieved its objective of fully suppressing the Boulder Mountain Fire, keeping fire footprint as small as possible and keeping the fire away from the Tacoma Creek Road east of Little Pend Oreille Wildlife Refuge and north of Kalispell Peak and North Fork Tacoma Creek. Well, sounds like some progress being made on our local wildfires. Wondering if the increase in heat is probably not helping, but hopefully we get some more rain here soon. On those busy school nights with hours of sports practice and dance class when you just don't have time to make dinner, your local McDonald's has got the whole family covered. Whether you get a Happy Meal with Chicken McNuggets for the kids or a Big Mac for the adults, dinner is sure to be quick, easy, stress-free, and satisfying. Your locally owned and operated Kellogg McDonald's is located at 820 West Cameron Avenue. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba, I'm loving it. Takes in two Shoshone News Press headlines for Tuesday, September 27th. Headline, WSD pays off new school. This is by Josh McDonald. After almost 20 years, the taxpayers within the Wallace School District will see some relief on the tax rolls now that the district has paid off the construction bond for the new Wallace Junior Senior High School. The former building, although iconic in nature, required several upgrades in order to get it to a place where it could continue to be used as a school, which led to the subsequent $3.365 million bond being passed. Part of the old building was demolished to make room for the parking area for the new building, but the historic old gymnasium and east wing of the school still remain. The new building was built during the 2002-2003 school year and then occupied the next year. With the payoff of the bond, taxpayers should see a tax savings of approximately $70.87 per $100,000 of assessed value to their property of residence, primary residence rather. WSD Superintendent Todd Howard believes that the school itself is a testament to the level of community pride that exists throughout his district, especially for their high school. The district has held off on several other project upgrades as they've worked toward paying off the newest school building in the Silver Valley, but 20 years is still a long time for anything, and despite the payoff, WHS already requires an upgrade to their heating system. Other district projects include a new boiler burner system at Silver Hills Elementary School in Osborne, as well as a restroom remodel at the kindergarten 6th grade facility. While no concrete dates for these projects were provided, it's likely that the district will plan on a solution for them in the near future. Howard also told the news press that there is currently a district committee that is working on potential short long-term planning for the Civic Auditorium, or the old gymnasium, which has fallen into severe disrepair on the inside. The news press will be reaching out to get an update on any plans that get made for the old gym. Oh, good for Wallace School District getting that paid off, and that'll save some money for the taxpayers. And hey, nothing wrong with that. Moving on, local bank celebrates Day of Caring. This is also by Josh McDonald. Acts of service is one of the five love languages, and Mountain West Bank recently took an opportunity to show its new home some love as part of its annual Day of Caring. Mountain West Bank General Manager Gina Dorschel explained Day of Caring as a bank-wide event where each branch of in the Mountain West Bank footprint takes a half day to volunteer in their community where needed. Quote, "We ask around the community to find out what needs they have and how we can assist," Dorschel said. As part of the Community Reinvestment Act, Meals on Wheels has already been on our radar, so we reached out to Daryl Lemieux to see if there was something that we could do for them. Lemieux told Dorschel that their Osborne office facility could use a little TLC. The Meals on Wheels program was on the verge of financial ruin just a few years ago, as every available penny was going to making sure meals could be cooked and that vehicles were running in order to deliver them. So the helpful hand of a few volunteer painters was appreciated. Quote, "They had a great time, and Daryl even made sure they were fed well there," Dorschel said. We are excited to be part of the communities in the Silver Valley and are continually looking for projects or event opportunities where we can lend a hand. This isn't the only thing Mountain West Bank has been working on lately either. It recently was instrumental in the installation of a sensory room at Silver Hills Elementary School. A sensory room is a special room designed to develop a person's sense, usually through special lighting, music, and objects. It can be used as a therapy for children with limited communication skills as well. The News Press will have an in-depth feature on the sensory room in the coming weeks. Sounds cool. As somebody who's been with Mountain West Bank for a long time, they're a good group, good bank, and glad that they were going out and helping out in the community. Once again, we'd like to thank Black Sheep Sporting Goods for sponsoring this episode. Home of the lowest prices on all things outdoor since 1975, Black Sheep Sporting Goods is your one-stop shop for all your camping, fishing, hunting, and clothing needs. Open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Check out Black Sheep's new location in the Silver Lake Mall. Black Sheep Sporting Goods, celebrating 45 years as your favorite sporting goods store. All right, everybody. Thanks again for listening in. We really appreciate it. Please like, comment, and share all of our stuff on social media. If you're interested in the stories we talked about today or the ones we did not, check us out at www.coeurdaluepress.com, shoshonenewspress.com, bonnercountydailybee.com, or thebonnersferryherald.com. If you listen to us on a podcatcher, please subscribe and or like and or follow us and leave a nice review. So I have a job, so I can keep doing this, and you can keep getting the news through a podcast, and we can all just live happy, happy, happy lives. That's at least that's how I see it. No, positive reviews are appreciated, everybody. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, if you'd like to buy an ad, just get a hold of me at C Watson, that's C-W-A-T-S-O-N, at Shoshone, S-H-O-S-H-O-N-E, newspress, N-E-W-S, P-R-E-S-S, .com. All right, everybody. Thanks again. See you on Friday.